If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I like to win.
Time Warner, looking end zone, throws, touchdown. Taking a deep shot, DK is down there. DK, touchdown.
Chat.
Tighten up.
Let's get it, chat. Tighten up, chat. Stop playing, chat. Tighten up, man.
Oh, welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible Podcast Live, MCA Live. Thank you guys for tuning in. We are presented by Sinker's Beverages, the premier wine, spirits, and beer store in East Nashville in partnership with 440 Sports. I'm Justin Graver. Joining me as always, Justin Mello. Justin, let's tell the people a little bit about why we're doing this stream here instead of a recorded Monday episode. Last Monday, if you guys recall, we went live because the Titans traded Roger McCreary and we wanted to get that reaction up instantly. Well, today's motivation, not super different. We wanted to get our thoughts up instantly because if we record this and then I take it into the edit room and it takes me an hour or two to get it published, if the Titans make a trade in that time period, then this whole episode is stupid and like there's no point in anyone watching it because it'll be out of date. This way, if the Titans make a trade in the next 2 hours or whatever, at least our thoughts were published and timestamped and we don't look dumb for not talking about something that just happened. Justin, how's it going?
I am doing well. We warned you guys yesterday. We wasn't sure what Monday's episode was going to look like. So I think we called an audible in the true name of our show and decided to come live now and talk about what could happen. I think as of this time right now, we are exactly 5 minutes away from the trade deadline. It's 4 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. It's currently 3 p.m. Eastern here on Monday. So 25 hours away. We did get one trade on Monday morning, the first one of the day, being the Philadelphia Eagles went out and acquired Jalen Phillips, the edge rusher from the Miami Dolphins, in exchange for a 2026 third-round pick. Now, I bring that up because not only is it the only trade that happened today, but I think it's relevant to the Titans for a couple of reasons. A pass rusher got traded in Jalen Phillips. Titans have two of them, potentially, that they're trying to trade, in Arden Key and Draymond Jones. Everyone's talking about the pricing. The Titans didn't do very well, might be the opinion on the Jarvis Brownlee trade. They certainly didn't do well. On the Roger McCreary trade, they might not have done very well. I thought the Dolphins got a pretty decent return here for Jalen Phillips, like a 2026 third rounder. And look, I think he's got more value on the market than Arden Key and Draymond Jones have. You know, Phillips, a former first-round pick, has been very productive when he's on the field. But good news, I think, for the Titans to see one of those pass rushers go for a third-rounder. Shout-out to Joey, already recognizing that we made a change to the chat overlay. Thank you for noticing, Joey. We really appreciate it. It's like when your wife gets her hair done and you come home and you point it out. It's just, we really appreciate you noticing the little things because we put so much effort into this. Thank you for that, Joey. But back to the trade. Yes, I think it's good news for the Titans that the Dolphins got a third rounder for Jalen Phillips. Again, yeah, he's got more value than the rushers the Titans are trying to trade, but
a little or a ton. He's actually like a proven good pass rusher.
Well, yeah, he's been very injury prone too.
Yes,
though, right.
Like that's fair.
And he's on an expiring deal, as the Titans guys are as well. He reunites with Vic Fangio, you know, who coached him in Miami. So a lot of dot connecting that made sense there for the Eagles. Of course, it removes the team from the potential Arden Key and Draymond Jones landing spots, right? The Eagles aren't going to trade for one of those guys now. But what does that do to the San Francisco 49ers, who, by the way,
that's the team I was
pointed out as the
team I was going to bring up because of what happened yesterday. Go ahead.
Right? Because he played for them in 2021, Arden Key, career high 6.5 sacks. He had that again in Tennessee, but matching a career high 6.5 sacks. And now they lose Michael Williams, first round pick, to a torn ACL injury. They were already down pretty bad after losing Bosa to a season ending knee injury. They went out and they did a couple things, right? They traded for Keon White. They signed Cleveland Farrell. But now losing Michael Williams might put them back in the market there. And like the Arden Key thing, yeah, it was 3 years ago he played for them. They still got the same head coach, and they've got the same defensive line coach still, right, from the Arden Key 2021 season. So I don't think Arden Key had 6 sacks here total. He had a year where he had 6.5, Casey. Lighten up a little, brighten up, put a smile. Arden Key's done a couple things here, but certainly, you know, you wonder what that does to the pass rushing situation, the Jalen Phillips deal. I want to pose a question to you, Graver, because I've been talking about Draymond Jones specifically, who had 1.5 sacks yesterday against the Chargers. He had 7 pressures, a season high mark for him. Yes, the Chargers were dealing with some injuries up front, but that's 4 games in a row that Draymond Jones has at least 1 sack. He's got 4.5 sacks total because, again, he had 1.5 yesterday. Are you at the point with Draymond Jones? Would you consider keeping him and maybe re-signing him? Or are you like, yeah, you know, he's 29. They signed him as a Band-Aid. It's good that he's playing well right now. It increases his value. Knowing, and I want to, all you know all this, but I want to provide all the context before you start answering the question. They've got no one under contract next year at edge, right? It's Femi Oladejo, and I guess Jalen Harrell still on his rookie deal as well. But Draymond Jones, obviously Arden Key, Jahad Ward, they're all on expiring contracts. This makes Draymond Jones, you know, Will Lomas said this to me, it makes him a bit of a unicorn, right? Where he's on an expiring deal, and you might have value and trade him, but it was actually Mike Borgonzi who signed him. And we know Mike Borgonzi's been trying to get rid of a lot of the guys he inherited, right? So it's a bit of a unique situation with Draymond Jones. What say you?
I think it depends on Femi Oladejo, because this is what this team needs right now going into next offseason. Before they ship anyone off, you know, today or tomorrow, they need a premier pass rusher, game-wrecking edge player that we expect, you and I, expect them to target with their first-round pick next year, depending on where that is or if they trade down or whatever. We still, no matter what happens with the pick, we expect them to eventually use it on a guy like Reuben Bain or Avril Reese or somebody that's going to come in and be a true game-wrecker at that position, something the Titans haven't really had since Javon Kearse. And like maybe Brian Arakpo. I think Brian Arakpo is a tier below the type of player I'm talking about the Titans going out and getting. But you need 2 edge rushers in the NFL, obviously. And ideally, you have a stable of like 3, 4, 5 edge rushers that you can rotate in and out of your lineup and keep the other guys fresh and, you know, designated pass rushers that come in on third down and have a limited role, but an effective role. All of that to say, it depends on how they view Femi Oladejo and what his development track looks like. Because if you can get one of these guys we're talking about in the first round, and Femi Oladejo develops into a solid enough piece, like a Derek Morgan level type of piece, then you still need a third pass rusher. Is that Draymond Jones? Is Draymond Jones the number 2 guy based on how he's been playing the last few games? He's playing like that level of guy. And then Femi's your rotational guy. It seems like they like Femi on early downs to come in and stop the run. So how does that shake out? I think ultimately, like, what are you going to get for Draymond Jones? A fifth-round pick, a sixth-round pick, a sixth-round pick swap where you move up from the sixth to the fifth or something? Like, you're not going to get a pick that would allow you to replace Draymond Jones. However, could you sign somebody else in next year's free agency or find another solution? I think those are the options you have to weigh. Ultimately, I would if you get an offer for Draymond Jones, I think having the flexibility in the draft with more picks, even if they're late round picks that you can package together and move up to get higher quality guys. Ultimately, I would move Draymond Jones if the right offer came in. And the right offer to me is pretty much the Roger McCreary deal. You move from the sixth round to the fifth round. If they can get better than that, amazing. That's kind of where I fall. Are you team trade Draymond Jones or not?
Well, here's where I'm at with this conversation in general. I've looked ahead to free agency next year. It's not a very good edge rushing group. It's actually going to be a pretty bad one, in my opinion. Like, the Titans are not going to sign Trey Hendrickson, who's going to be, 31, going on 32, coming off. He's had an injury this year. Like, that's not going to do that. Jalen Phillips, who is probably going to hit the market. I don't think the Eagles are going to re-sign him. Kwity Paye probably hits the market. Like, you're going to be a couple handful of decent guys, but it's not a good room, a good crop of free agents, I should say. If the Titans have any aspirations, and I'm not trying to, I'm not kidding when I say this. If they have any aspirations of not being like a 3-win football team for a third year in a row, this is where I almost stopped you. There's no way I'm going into next season with Femi Oladejo as my number two, at least not my guaranteed number two. Like, you're going to draft one very early. We're projecting. I still think that's where they're going to go with their first round pick. I don't know that I'm going to change my tune on that come April. I think that's how I'll feel the whole way. But they cannot go into the year, I think, with Reuben Bain and Femi Oladejo as their starters. Femi has not shown enough. He is on IR right now with a serious enough injury that he is not going to be back after the initial 4-game absence. If he comes back at all, he's going to get 3 or 4 games in, most likely. The chances that he shows enough in those 3-4 games where any team with semi-realistic aspirations can go into next year as their number two, there's no way. He's got to earn being the number three. Ideally, like, to me, this is not going to be the edge room next year. But if it was Reuben Bain, Draymond Jones, Femi Oladejo, and Jahad Ward, like, I don't know that Oladejo is my number three. Like, to me, he's got to compete with the veteran guys who have been productive. So I'm torn on Draymond Jones. It depends what you get for him, but I wouldn't be opposed to re-signing him and making him my number two or three, because there's no way Femi just earns the right to be ahead of him. No, he's got to play his way into that role, and he hasn't done it so far. So the stretch that he's had is the definition of a flash in the pan. I mean, Joey, yes and no. Like, this is a guy who signed a $51 million contract not that long ago because he was very productive in Denver, right? Like, it was a bit of a different role and stuff, but he's not a nobody, right? Like, this isn't Sharif Finch having 2 good games in a row, right? Like, he's had some production throughout his NFL career. Again, he was making $17 million a year last season in Seattle, was the average annual salary of the contract that he had signed. So, Femi needing to earn number three is spot on. Thank you, Paul. You hear me preaching over here. Like, they've got to do something besides drafting a guy number one. They've got to do that, and they've got to do something else.
Right, that's what I've been saying.
It could be re-signing Draymond Jones, or it could be signing Kwity Paye or Jalen Phillips. I'm just saying, I'm of the opinion all three of those guys are kind of similar.
Yeah, I think Kwity Paye and Jalen Phillips are a level above Draymond Jones.
If they are, I can concede that. It's slight. They are 8 or 9 sack guys, where Draymond Jones is like maybe a 7 sack guy this year.
Yes, I agree with that. And I was never advocating that Femi goes into the year as the number two edge with no other players added. Like you, I've been saying for months, I said this, how long ago did I say this? That they need to treat edge next year the way they treated tackle this year, where it doesn't matter what you do. If you have to overpay, if it's the one spot you overpay and you're going to be very frugal with the rest of your money and you're going to sign veteran stopgap guys to fill out the depth and fill out the roster, but the one position you should splurge at is the hole that has evaded you. You haven't been able to fill it in years. And that's that edge role that a guy like Kwity Paye is the perfect guy to me to go give him a contract that isn't overpay, but at least you get someone in there that's going to give you good snaps at that position across from your, you know, number one pick, or you trade down to number three, or you end up picking at number three or whatever. And then you pick that guy at number three, like that's your edge tandem. And Femi Oladejo, if he develops, great. That's gravy on top of it. And you could use another guy. You could use him developing, but you don't rely on him developing. But ultimately, I would still trade Draymond Jones. And hey, you could trade Draymond Jones. The team that trades for him doesn't sign him to an extension. He hits the market and you bring him back. You say, hey, Draymond, we just needed to take an 8-game break from you so that we could add an extra draft pick, but we want to get you back next year. Like, I don't know if that happens very often, but it's not the craziest thing.
And speaking of the Dan Moore thing, you hit the nail on the head, because they are going to have to overpay, because everyone's going to want a pass rusher. That's, you know, par for the course. And I'm looking at the – like, it's grim. Like, a bunch of veterans the Titans are going to have no interest in. Trey Hendrickson, Khalil Mack, Hassan Reddick, Joey Bosa, like, Denico Autry. Like, no thank you to all of those, essentially. You're really looking at, like, a Malcolm Kuntz, who is coming off – you know, he had an ACL last year. He was pretty good in 2023. But he's kind of regaining strength, so you're a bit of a reclamation there. You're looking at some of the other guys that I mentioned, like a Boye, I believe it's pronounced Mufi, which kind of shocked me the other day. Yeah, that's what I was told the other day from the Seattle Seahawks. Like a
Mafe.
Like this is a rough edge group. Jalen Phillips potentially. It is not Odafe Owe who ate Dan Moore's lunch yesterday on a couple snaps. Like there's literally four or five guys that you're gonna potentially want to go get one of them. It's not a good crop. So going to move on from that conversation, though, because one that might be really interesting. And sorry, Devin, structural failure. Good comment there. Having Femi battle for a starting position after being drafted in the second round is a structural failure. You know what, Devin? You're probably right. But they also can't sit here and pretend that the opposite it should be true, right? Like he hasn't done enough.
They didn't draft him. Well, they didn't draft him to come in and be a starter. He's a project. It was acknowledged that he's a project.
You drafted Devin means in year two, though, right? Like to have him battle for a starting spot in year two.
You drafted traits. You didn't draft production. You didn't draft technique. Your coaches have to get those things out of the traits that you drafted. Obviously, a broken leg is going to derail his development. And you can't like hold that against the front office for drafting a guy who breaks his leg in week 7. Like you don't plan for guys breaking their leg, and that's obviously going to stunt his development. And so now you have to push back. Like, what if he comes back in week 15? He get 3 weeks to see what he is. Like, that doesn't really give you a great picture. That's just the nature of the situation. It doesn't make it a failure that he broke his leg and now you have to delay his development to year 2. You see what you have in spring. You see what you have in training camp, and then you decide what his role is going to be. But the fact that you drafted a project, I mean, if you're going to take issue with something, take issue with drafting a project when you're a rebuilding team that needs instant impact players. But you're also a rebuilding team that if the project pays off, you get great value at a position of need, and you maybe can afford to wait for him to come around, because you're not going to be good. If Femi Oladejo was a 10 sack guy or a 1 sack guy this season, it's not going to change how good or bad the Titans are. So maybe you can afford to wait. I don't know. I think calling it a failure is taking the context away. He broke his leg. Like,
he wasn't playing well enough when he was out there either, right?
He had his best game the game he broke his leg. Like, that we were seeing it. We were seeing development. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen from week 1 and then week 2 suddenly he's going to be a star. It's like in week 7 he started playing better and then he broke his leg. Like, who knows what he would be how he would be playing right now if he'd played the last 3 games in full, you know? Like,
I'm going to shift the conversation to Chig, if that's okay, because we spent a lot of time on the edges there. Yeah. I think we kind of maxed out that one. But regarding Chig, maybe some new, I don't want to say new information, but new intrigue. Still think he's a potential candidate to get traded. I mean, to recap, I think all of you are familiar. You're all diehard Titans fans. He's on an expiring deal. Mike Borgonzi didn't draft him, right? Very similar to the Roger McCreary situation where they just end up moving on because they don't see him in their future plans. We don't know for sure that they don't see Chig in their future plans, but I'd like to think if they did, they might have gotten an extension done with him like they did with Amani Hooker. You know, even though they didn't bring him in, they got it done, you know, before the season because they wanted to keep him around. I still think a couple of landing spots for Chig. You know, the Denver Broncos haven't gotten anything out of tight end spot. I think Evan Engram didn't have a single catch yesterday, so that's probably fresh in their minds. Tampa Bay strikes me as one that could be a little intriguing just based on how much they pass the ball, and they've obviously got a lot of injuries at the pass-catching spots right now. The new one that emerged yesterday, as you guys probably know, potentially the Green Bay Packers, you know, who lost Tucker Kraft to a season-ending ACL injury. Tucker Kraft, the Packers have 77 wide receivers that they drafted in the last three drafts, and Tucker Kraft was leading them in catches, receiving yards, and touchdowns this year. Massive blow to the Packers offense. They obviously have aspirations of winning a Super Bowl this year, in my opinion, and the NFC's wide open. Very disappointing loss for them yesterday to the, who do they lose? The Carolina Panthers. They're a weird team, Green Bay. It's not a Green Bay Packers show, but they've lost to the Panthers and the Cleveland Browns this year.
I covered that game
for a Super Bowl, right? So they're a bit strange. Fresh in their minds, that loss as they approach Monday and Tuesday at the trade deadline. I think Chig would be great in Green Bay, and I can't help but wonder if maybe they have some interest there after the Tucker Kraft injury.
Well, let's talk about this comment from SBT Highlights. Chig is not great, but he's been okay. I think if he'll accept a, quote, fair contract, he'd be a great signing. If not, for sure get something for him. Him and Helm are good enough to hold down the tight end room. Let's get one thing clear really quick. Okay, let's say you're an NFL player, right? Let's say you are a 23, 24, 25-year-old who's been in the league for 4 years. In all 4 years you've been in the league, you've played for a dysfunctional, terrible organization. You've managed to produce some decent stats in despite that situation. Your entire organization is in flux. You don't know who the head coach is going to be. You don't know. Your future is murky. They just drafted a player that plays your position in the fourth round, and he looks really good when he gets opportunities on the field. If you're Chig Okonkwo, why would you want to return to this team in free agency? Unless they overpay you. Because look, these guys are going to follow the money ultimately. A Titans regime that has pretty much shown they're not going to overpay outside of the Dan Moore signing, which was, again, a necessity. Like, they're not going to overpay Chig. That when teams sign their own players to extensions, I'm not saying that they get a deal or anything like that, because we see guys reset the market all the time, but it's structured in a way that it helps the team and it helps the player. If you're Chig Okonkwo, you want to go somewhere else. You don't want to re-sign in Tennessee. And if you're the Titans regime, you want to draft, develop, and retain the guys that you drafted, not the guys that are from two regimes ago. So, all that to say, if I'm Chig Okonkwo, there's no way I want to come back to the Tennessee Titans, which means...
I'm sorry. I mean, maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but I don't know. The Titans Kool-Aid right now is piss-flavored, I would say. But
yeah.
Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but I think Chig likes it here. Like, I think he would consider... And I'm splitting hairs. I'm not trying to, you know, point this out, but you talked about not knowing who the head coach. He will know who the head coach is, right? Because they'll hire him 2 months before he hits free agency, obviously. But he doesn't know who the head coach is right now, of course. I get that, right? But he'll know before he has to make a decision in free agency. I get the impression that Chig kind of likes it here. I mean, who doesn't love Nashville? It's tax-free. Get the impression he's got a good relationship with Cam Ward. Like, I think Chig will – I don't think he's – I'm not saying he definitely wants to be here, but I don't think he's dying to get out the door either. Like, I think he would consider.
I think he is.
If it made sense, you know, money wise, I don't think he's going to take less to stay here, but
no,
I don't think he's going to have a robust market either. Right. Like, he's probably a $6 million a year kind of guy. You think he makes more than $6 million a year? Like, I think it's probably around
in that range, probably a little more, just because I think teams are going to look at, again, traits and project him out of a terrible situation he was in Tennessee and say, look at the plays he was able to make when he did get the ball in his hands. I think Chig is as good as gone after these last eight games. So I think Titans fans are kidding themselves if they think the plan or the Titans should keep both Chig and Gunnar Helm. Gunnar Helm was basically drafted as a Chig Okonkwo replacement. And by the way, Gunnar Helm was awesome yesterday, especially blocking in the run game on that first drive when Tony Pollard ripped off those two big runs back to back. The second one, Gunnar Helm is blocking the hell out of. I think it was either Deion Haley or the other linebacker that we talked about on the preview show that was there when Mike McCoy was there.
Denzel Perryman was it?
I think it was Perryman, actually. I mean, Gunnar Helm has really come along because he struggled the first few weeks of the season in the run blocking department, and he's really picked it up. So I think, number one, we talked about this a little bit, this front office wants to see the young guys, and the coaching staff wants to play the veterans that they trust. Well, here's one way to force the coaching staff to play the young guys. Trade the guys in their way. And Chigakonkwo right now is in the way of Gunnar Helm. The fact that Gunnar Helm didn't get his first target until there were 7 minutes left in the game yesterday is inexcusable. It's
horrible.
I don't
think that's Chig's fault, though, to be honest with you.
Chig had a designed third down target on the first drive of the game. So if he's gone, that's a Gunnar Helm play.
You sure you trust this staff that's not David Martin Robinson? Like, I don't like that they trade Chig. Some another tight end's going to come in and play a decent amount too.
Well, that's the other thing that Seam's not doing is they're not playing enough two tight end sets. So you want Chig and Helm to coexist. Yes, we would all like that. But they need to be in a 50% two tight end set world for that to even happen. And that's not the way that this team has been running the personnel. And, you know, it doesn't matter. We're not talking about the play calling, which was atrocious yesterday or anything like that on this episode. And for the long-term future of the team, doesn't matter because none of those guys will be here. All that to say, I think Chig, to me, stands out as if you showed me the Titans roster and said, one of these guys is getting traded before the deadline, pick who it is. Chig's the guy I'm picking. I think that the Titans are most motivated to move him because of the expiring contract, because they have Gunnar Helm, because they want to see Gunnar Helm. And I think that he can get the most value in terms of what is left on the roster aside from trading, you know, Jeffrey Simmons. So what is that value? I think it's similar to the Roger McCreary deal. I mean, you're still talking about 8 games of a tight end who hasn't produced that much. You know, you go back to his rookie season when he was super efficient. That's a long time ago now. So I think it's probably, yeah, you move up around from 7 to 6 or from 6 to 7, or if you're really lucky from 6 to 5, if you're really lucky from 5 to 4, but I don't think you're getting that kind of offer. I think it's a 6 to 5 swap. Again, you flip another one of those 6 into a 5th. That helps you come draft day with the flexibility. It helps you get Gunnar Helm on the field, and it helps you get something for a guy that you're going to lose after the next 8 games anyway. So that's where I come down on the Chig conversation.
Graver did have to say 6-7. great comment by, is it Evant Grunge there? Run the Helm Wildcat offense. You never know what they're going to do on Sunday. I'm going to move the conversation along to, I don't know if we combine Calvin Ridley and Tony Pollard, but.
No, we shouldn't because I don't think we should because Calvin Ridley is like a real, there's like actual, we're getting buzz from insiders on Ridley, and there are a number of teams, the Bills, the Patriots, there are a number of teams that could be interested in trading for a wide receiver. So he, to me, is like another very interesting one.
Yeah, Mike Florio reported yesterday, of course, national reporter, that the Titans are shopping Calvin Ridley. Teron Davenport took some, I guess, didn't love the wording of it and said, they're not really shopping. They're answering the phone and talking about Calvin Ridley, but they're not shopping.
Well, can I talk about that really quick?
Sure.
This is a game. This whole thing is a game, right? And different people have different sources that they use to play this game in different ways. And if a report comes out that the Titans are shopping Calvin Ridley, suddenly, you know, Elliot Wolf in New England picks up the phone and says, oh, you want to get rid of this guy? Yeah, we might be able to part with a 7th for him. Versus the Titans version of the report. Hey, get this to Teron. Get this out there. We need this out there. People are calling us, asking us for Ridley. There are multiple people calling. The demand is high. If you want him, you better call and offer something because we're not just going to sell him. We need him for our young quarterback to have a weapon that he trusts. We're not just going to sell him for peanuts, but hey, we are getting a lot of calls on him. So if you want him, you better pony up and make us an offer that is worth it. We'll never know what's really going on, but I want everyone to keep in mind that happens. That stuff happens more than you think. Almost every report comes from an agent or a team executive with an agenda, okay? Everything, absolutely. Every bit of news that you get that is not actual news. That's like a rumor, a report, or whatever. So keep that in mind.
The interesting thing about Calvin Ridley, of course, is the bloated contract, right? Like 4 years, $92 million. Obviously not living up to that right now. At the end of this year, he'll only be halfway through that deal. So Either the Titans, I mean, I don't want to say either, actually. Titans probably got to eat a significant portion of money if they want to move him. And that also might help you get a bit more for him, right? Like, if you're willing to eat money, favor for a favor, right? Well, I did that for you. You got to do more for me. And that means you got to make a bit of a better offer than you would otherwise. A team might view him as a midseason rental because, I mean, he's a potential cap casualty here in Tennessee. So another team gets him, inherits that deal. They might cut him after the year, too. So there's a lot of moving parts to the Calvin Ridley discussion. And whether or not the Titans are willing to eat money and how much they're willing to eat it makes a huge difference on the amount of interest in him and what they could get back for him. Now, if there's any good news on the Calvin Ridley front, is it feels like there's quite a few teams out there that could look to acquire a wide receiver. Now, I know the Buffalo Bills are one of them, but I don't think the Bills are going to do something that aggressive. Like, remember, I think they're still a little shell-shocked from the Amari Cooper gamble last year. Like, that one kind of blew up in their face. If the Bills trade for a receiver, I don't think it's going to be a high-priced one like Calvin Ridley. But I look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, who got their season back on track by upsetting the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. They've got nothing at wide receiver two opposite DK Metcalf. Although granted, Arthur Smith, their offensive coordinator, of course, been running a lot of two tight end sets there to kind of compensate for the lack of a number two wide out. So I don't know how much interest they're going to have, but I do think they could get, they could look for a receiver. You look at the New England Patriots. I mean, that's an obvious one. They're doing very well. I think they're 7-2 now, I believe. They're winning their fifth straight yesterday. I think it was
sixth.
Six straight, excuse me. They lost Kayshon Boutte to an injury. I don't know that we know how serious it is. I saw that week to week, then I saw maybe day to day, but
they were there's been rumors around them wanting to trade for a receiver dating back to the offseason.
Right.
And
right.
Recently there was a AJ Brown to the Patriots rumor, which I never bought for a second. But
someone dot connected Mike Vrabel to that one.
But somebody knows that the Patriots want to upgrade at wide receiver if they can. And I think that they want to, and I think Calvin Ridley would be a very easy way for them to do so, and a guy, and would come in and not have a ton of pressure to be the guy like he is here in Tennessee.
Right. So the Patriots certainly, I think the Patriots and Steelers to me are the two that really strike me as potentially going after a wide receiver. And on Calvin Ridley, again, it's going to come down to the money. How much are the Titans willing to eat? It helps them, I would say, that Chris Olave is apparently not available.
Right.
I mean, Jacoby Myers probably is available, and I think that's probably their biggest issue. And I think teams will prefer to acquire Jacoby Myers because I think right now you'd argue they're at similar skill set, but Myers is on an expiring deal, and teams will love that there's no future financial commitment and there's no dead money and anything like that that might be involved with Ridley. Let's True. Talk a little Tony Pollard.
Oh, hang on. We didn't talk about what they could get for Calvin Ridley, and I wanted to mention it because
I'll be honest with you. I mean, you take that one because to me, it's all over the place. Like, how much money are they willing to eat? Like, it really is. It's not going to be better than a fourth rounder, in my opinion. You think it could be a third?
No. I don't think it could be better than a fourth rounder.
I said it's not better than a fourth. So anything from a fourth to a sixth is kind of my ceiling to floor.
Right, and I think it could be a fourth if the Titans eat the money, which I think they absolutely would be willing to do because we know how much Borgonzi wants to acquire top 100 pick. This wouldn't be a top 100 pick, but it would give you more ammo to go get a top 100 pick on draft day. And I think they have so much cap space next year. And again, they're going to be frugal with that cap space outside of maybe one big signing to address one big need that they could conceivably eat as much of the contract as the league rules allow them to eat. And get a fourth round pick for him because the team trading for him would be like, well, we're getting basically a free receiver in terms of our cap sheet here. So I think if, you know, the Titans traded DeAndre Hopkins for a conditional fifth that could have become a fourth if he played however many percent of snaps and they made it to the Super Bowl. He never played enough snaps, so that pick stayed in the fifth round. But did the Titans use that to go get Elik Iemanjir? Maybe that was the other fifth round pick. Not sure. But point is, DeAndre Hopkins for a fifth-round pick. DeAndre Hopkins was he more productive than Calvin Ridley in the season?
I think he was a bit older. And I mean, he had an
injury. He was older.
He was definitely older, and he had an injury at the same time that he was essentially traded, which Calvin Ridley's dealing with right now as well.
And they still got a fifth for him that could have turned into a fourth if he played enough. So I think that that's your realistic range is fourth to fifth. You know, if the Titans don't eat the salary, maybe it's a sixth. I think people who are like, if we can get a seventh for him, then do it. Like, I think you can get a little more than a seventh for Calvin Ridley. He's still a good receiver, and he's just been, you know, injured and dealing with the worst organization. So,
good question by Nick there on the Calvin Ridley out. It's essentially this year, Nick. This offseason now, he's got a bonus, a roster bonus that's due on March 17th. So that's essentially your deadline to make the decision. All teams make the decision for the roster bonus is due. If they cut him as of pre-June 1st, they're freeing up $13.7 million in cap space, which is fairly significant. But they would absorb $13 million in dead cap. Now, you wish that number was a little lower, but teams do it. You know, they kind of absorb that number all the time. Now, if you weren't desperate for the money right away, which the Titans won't be, they have a ton of cap space. They could designate him as a post-June cut. If you guys aren't familiar how that works, I think most of you are, but you can make the move anytime you want. But if you designate it as a post-June 1st cut, you actually don't get the cap savings until June 1st.
Right.
So if they do that, they'd be saving $18.7 million against the cap, which lowers the dead money to just $8 million. So really, really tempting. Of course, teams tend to want their money right away. But Titans are in a scenario with how much cap space they have that they could afford to wait. So there's a decision there. So the out on Calvin Ridley is right now, like right, essentially in the offseason, they could cut him. Before I get to Tony Pollard here, I see our pal Ben has dropped a couple comments here about trading for Breece Hall.
No.
Ben, not only it's a little unrealistic, obviously, but I'll also inform you that it sounds like the Jets are not going to trade Breece Hall at all. You know, he's been playing really good for them this year. They've got a ton of cap space. I think they're going to keep him and re-sign him. So he's probably no longer going to be on the trade block. We'll see what happens before tomorrow. But I think Breece Hall will be a Jet next year. Tony Pollard ran the ball pretty well yesterday. You know, he was pretty damn tough. Ran it with a lot of toughness, physicality. Had his moments against a team, by the way, who could certainly use a running back. The Los Angeles Chargers right now have Najee Harris, Omarion Hampton, and Hassan Haskins all on IR. Three running backs. Najee Harris is not coming back at all this year. Season-ending injury. The rookie Hampton is dealing with an injury that's going to keep him out beyond the four-game minimum on IR. And Hassan Haskins just went on IR. Titans was the first game he missed. So they are really banged up there at running back. The Chargers are. I would love for the Titans to move Tony Pollard. I'll be honest with you. I feel bad saying this because I really like Tony Pollard, the person and the player. But I would take almost anything. Like, there's a chance that they're going to cut him at the end of the year. Yeah, if Spears could stay healthy, it would be an easy call. But, Shane, you know, good point. But I think the way that this is going, we know Tajay Spears is never going to be a workhorse due to the health. You're always going to have to pair him with someone else. But I think regardless that someone else is probably not Tony Pollard next year. Like, I think they're going to get rid of Pollard, whether they cut him or trade him right now, cut him in the offseason or trade him right now. I think they're going to draft a running back or sign another one in free agency and pair him with Tajay Spears next season. They also have Khalil Mollings, who's eligible to come off IR any moment. Now, not that I have any faith in him being the future guy, but in a wasted year, I wouldn't mind trading Pollard and giving Khalil Mollings a run as the 1B to Tajay. Give him 10 carries a game, and you give Tajay the other 10, essentially what you're doing with Pollard right now. In a wasted 1-8 season, I wouldn't mind seeing what Khalil Mollings has. But, I would definitely trade Pollard if they got a good offer for him. I mean, any offer, I guess.
I think a good offer for Tony Pollard is moving from the 7th to the 6th or giving up a 2027 7th for a 2026 7th, like the lowest possible like return on a trade that you could get, because he's an older running back again, who's in a potentially last, you know, out year of a contract, who has had a fumbling issue this year, who hasn't been super productive in a lot of games this year, who failed to get in from 4th and 1 at the goal line yesterday. Just kidding. That has nothing to do with it. But I mean, I'm fully with you. You know, Kenneth Walker is a free agent next year. Rico Dowdle looks amazing for Carolina right now. Free agent next year. Rashad White, who was a starter until they drafted Bucky Irving and has looked like a starter in relief of Bucky Irving, is a free agent next year. Travis Etienne, who I've never loved, but Travis Etienne is a free agent next year. Breece Hall, we talked about, he might end up back in New York. But the easiest way to get a running back like this is just draft a small school guy on day three who was uber productive, who had 5,000 career yards and 55 career touchdowns. Like, those guys exist. You know, the guys that we see.
Kyle Monen guy was drafted at 233rd overall. I did the math. I think he was the 15th running back. He had 176 yards yesterday in his first career start. He led all running backs.
I started him on my fantasy team. Thank you very much.
I started him on my fantasy team as well. Thank you very much. And I picked up Torrey Horton yesterday morning and started him. Boy, did I feel like a genius. And Caleb Williams was my bye week quarterback, by the way.
Wow.
Titans need to bring me in, maybe. Maybe that's what this episode's really all about.
Yeah, let's talk about Tavondre Sweat because he's on the thumbnail and we haven't talked about
him. Yeah, I'm shocked we've actually gotten this far and not talked about Tavondre Sweat because you and I are going to have very different opinions, I think, on this one.
I think you might be surprised. Go ahead, talk.
Oh, okay. I mean, I thought I was going to get a bunch of hook-ems and...
Well, hook-em, obviously. Obligatory hook-em.
Waving your hands around and stuff. I am not a big Tavondre Sweat guy right now. Graver, you know this for a fact. I messaged you in July. And what did I say? Do you remember what I said to you? I said, is Tavondre Sweat going to have a wasted year? Like, he's going to do nothing the entire year.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of nailed it. Like, I just felt this writing on the wall. And this might sound silly, but, and maybe you could say it was flawed process and good result on my end. But when he sat out such a long portion of the offseason with tonsillitis, it just was a little weird. And then he comes back. Let's summarize the whole situation. He comes back for week one. He's on a snap count. Right. And he injures his ankle. Like, I'm not one to nitpick like injuries. It's the NFL. I never hate a guy for getting injured. Okay. But he injures his ankle in week one. He misses week two ahead of week three, declares himself as available and healthy and goes on IR like the next day and misses four games.
I think it was either PK or Teron or somebody reported that he re-aggravated the injury during practice the next day. And at the time that he said that, he was feeling on track.
I just saw that, I think, yesterday, which was interesting because that never came out at the time, to my knowledge.
I do not think
that came out when it happened.
Because I tweeted something like, how dumb is this guy to say that he was ready to go? And then the next day he goes on IR, and I got multiple people responding to me the day he went on IR saying that it was reported that he got he re-aggravated the injury in practice. So I'm pretty sure that was available at the time.
Sure. I'll take your word for it. Now, he went on IR. He missed the four-game minimum, came back immediately after the four games, and he's been okay. You know, he's been all right. He hasn't, you know, he just got back. He just got the Patriots. So it's been three games, I think, because Patriots game was his first game. He's been all right. For me, it doesn't take a giant leap to see why they might not like Tavondre Sweat, the person. Like, I think the ugly reality here, no compensation, it's a character. It's definitely a character concern issue. There's no doubt about it, Sean. Look, the ugly truth here that most Titans fans might not want to admit, we might have claimed victory too early on Tavondre Sweat. Because when they drafted him at 38 or 39th overall, there was the character concerns came out during the pre-draft process. You can feel however you want about them, but Dane Brugler, who's one of the best in the business, maybe the best in the business, was adamant about the pre-draft concerns. After the Titans drafted him, he stayed adamant, said he was off a lot of teams' boards, period. And there was the DWI arrest, you know, during the pre-draft process, which didn't look great. It happened in April. You got to know how big of a month that is. Wasn't great for him. And I think there's some clear motivation, work ethic questions. Do I have a ton of confidence that he works as hard as he possibly can to be the best player he can possibly be? I'm not confident in that.
Let me speak to that because I was listening to PK's podcast last week and he's talking about, you know, he's out there at practice every day watching the open portion and literally talking about Tavondre Sweat said, Cam Ward's out here going 110% in warmups and giving S-word stuff to Tavondre Sweat for half-assing through warmups. And PK's like, that's the kind of, you know, which kind of player do you want to be? Like, oh, does it really matter if he's going to half-ass warmups? Maybe not. But if he gets injured, you know, because he's half-assing warmups, it's going to matter. It's an indicator of character and work ethic. And I'm kind of with you. Look, I think Tavondre Sweat is a pretty good, I'm not going to say really good, a pretty good second-year player, maybe the potential to be a really good player in a year or two. And I like him because I'm biased and I went to Texas and I watched him dominate for the Texas Longhorns as they went to back-to-back college football playoff semifinals. But the reality is he was drafted by Rand Carthon. And all the stuff you're talking about is true. And the other reality is, if they're not going to trade Jeffrey Simmons, Tavondre Sweat is going to give you a bigger return than any other player on the roster that you're actually willing to move, right? There's no other player on this roster that you're actually willing to move that has the value on the trade market that Tavondre Sweat would have. The Cowboys, the Niners, we talked about the Niners a bit. There are teams, the Bills, after they're losing Ed Oliver, there are teams that would, you know, salivate to get a Tavondre Sweat added to their defensive line. And ultimately, we're talking about defensive tackle right now. You know, we're not talking about a premier position in the NFL. And when Tavondre Sweat was picked, it was like, really? A defensive tackle at 38? That was the large...
I think a pass rushing defensive tackle is a premier position. Like the three tech to me is
sure.
Premier, but Tavondre Sweat's not that.
That's a defensive end. That's three tech. I mean, technically you would call it three tech. Like Jarrell Casey was, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I consider it a D tackle personally, but Tavondre Sweat is not that, right? He is someone who's a run stopper on early downs. Did not notice him once in the game Sunday. He did have a batted pass, I think, Andrew, against the Chargers that, and I'm sure, you know, they did a pretty good job stopping the run. I'm fairly confident he was in on, you know, a decent amount of that.
But a lot of that was at the point of attack. I'll be honest, watching the game yesterday, every time there was a big guy for the Titans getting push and getting in the backfield and disrupting something, I was like, oh, is that Tavondre Sweat? Oh, it's Sebastian Joseph Day. Wow, yeah. Good play.
I mean, Sebastian Joseph Day was phenomenal.
It was James Lynch and Sebastian.
By the way. He just spoke at the podium and he said, we're very hungry to have success in the second half of this season. We had 6 sacks yesterday and we could have had 12 by our count on the D line. So it's really interesting to hear his comments, but I'm out enough on Sweat where I'll be honest with you. Like if they got a 4th round pick straight up, I'm hoping for a 3rd, but if they got a 4th round straight up without having to be a swap BS, I think I would take it. Like, I think the writing's on the wall. I like, that's fine. You don't got to feel the same way.
Yeah, that's the line for me.
I'm not taking anything because I haven't told, like, I've got enough hope. Like, these issues weren't issues last year. Let's be honest. Like, 700 snaps last year, all rookie team. Like, he was good last year. I just feel like he's the type of guy that gets a little complacent. Did he come back and say, I want to be better? I want to be as great as I can possibly be. No, I think he came back and said, I am pretty good. I've got a ton of natural ability and I get by on it. Like that's the kind of guy that he strikes me as. So for me, I think a 4th straight up, a 3rd, I wouldn't even think twice. I would take a 3rd without even thinking twice. A 4th, I think I personally would take as well.
I think that's my line. Like, Borgonzi wants more top 100 picks, right? I mean, he wants more picks in general, but he wants more top 100. He wanted, what did he say, 12 top 100 in 3 years? Is that what he said?
Correct.
Or Brinker, I think, actually, is the one who said that. Regardless, I think that's, like, if I can get a 3rd-round pick for Tavondre Sweat, you spent a 2nd-rounder on him, and it's only a year and a half later. If you're moving from a 2nd to a 4th after a year and a half, it does seem a little quick to give up on him. When I think that there is enough demand with how many teams could really use a defensive tackle. By the way, the Jaguars, I don't think the Titans would make an in-division trade, but the Jags are another team that could, you know, drive that defensive tackle market up. I mentioned the Bills, I mentioned the Cowboys, I mentioned the Niners. Like, there's a lot of teams that could use a really impactful defensive tackle who, you know, he was what? I don't know if he actually was, but in terms of, like, draft pedigree and how we viewed these guys coming into the year, he was the best D lineman on the field for the Titans yesterday with Jeffrey Simmons out. And maybe he wasn't actually the best one on the field, but supposedly supposed to be the best one, right? If he goes to a place like Buffalo or Dallas, or maybe not Dallas, but one of these other teams, he doesn't have to be the best guy. He can just be a cog in the wheel. And here, I mean, I don't know. I feel like the Titans fans' expectations for him are putting pressure on him. I don't know. All that to say, like, I would keep him if you can't get a third, but I would move him in a heartbeat if you can, because I think getting that day two pick, that would be so valuable for the team. Imagine that pick becoming a wide receiver or a cornerback, or, you know, there's a lot of ways that could go. But yeah, I would move him for a third. I don't know if I'd move him for a fourth. That would be tough for me.
Totally fair. It'd be interesting to see if something gets done before tomorrow's deadline. We're essentially 25 hours and 15 minutes away from the deadline. 24 hours and 15 minutes, excuse me. 24 hours and 15 minutes. I'm bad at math. I'm a football guy. What do you expect? 24 hours and 15 minutes away from the deadline.
You want to answer a question?
Let's take a couple questions before we get out of here, because I think we're at about 50 minutes already. Titans did not do anything. They'll do something as soon as we get off the stream.
Yeah, we know that's going to happen.
And we'll come back on probably. What do you think about Robert Saleh as the coach and pairing him up with Mike? I'm assuming that means Mike McDaniel. I imagine, Sean, just surely you're not talking about Mike McCoy. look, that's a pairing that I'm very interested in. I've warmed up to the idea of Robert Saleh because I think the Titans really miss like the sort of tough SOB culture builder as the head coach. And I think Coach Saleh is definitely, I mean, no one's ever going to question his toughness. I think his teams are prepared, no doubt about it. I mean, he dealt with a lot there in New York. I mean, more than I think people realize, like a terrible owner and then awful quarterback, right? Like Zach Wilson and the whole Aaron Rodgers debacle. Like they just threw so much at him. And you add Mike McDaniel as the offensive coordinator to that, and that's when it then starts reaching home run territory for me. Like, I really, really like the Robert Saleh, Mike McDaniel pairing. I would sign up for that in a heartbeat. Iron Grids TV, you are referring to Clint Kubiak, the offensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks. Graver and I have been having a running joke because when I mentioned him a couple weeks ago, I'm going to exaggerate here, but Graver like told me I was an idiot and I should quit the podcast.
This was last Wednesday, not a couple weeks ago.
Last Wednesday. Well, you're throwing yourself under the bus, if anything.
It's like 4 days ago.
Because, I mean, Clint Kubiak's doing a great job there in Seattle. Look, I think the Titans are probably going to prioritize experience when they make this hire. I think they should prioritize experience after whiffing so bad on a first-timer in Brian Callahan. I don't know that they could take that risk again. But I said this. I'll argue that Clint Kubiak deserves to be as hot as any first-time candidate right now. Like, pump the brakes on the Joe Bradys and the Jesse Minters. I put Clint Kubiak right up there with them for what's happening in Seattle on offense right now. They had 31 points at halftime last night.
Here's what I'll say to your point in defense of Clint Kubiak as a coordinator. And this is a conversation we're going to have many times between now and January. But one thing that I think is super important for this team to look at is that, and the next head coach, is not necessarily their exact literal experience, but what kind of traits do they have? What kind of thinker are they? And how do they manage the pressures of game day under a strenuous ticking clock, every decision under a quick ticking clock? Because it's ultimately about that. At the end of the day, being the head coach of a football team is about solving problems. And if you are creative and quick-witted and able to solve problems, then you can find success as a head coach. Whether or not you know you're an innovative scheme person, like part of innovative scheme stuff is solving problems. And the thing that Clint Kubiak has shown me that is a very, very valuable trait, I think, in a head coach, especially an offensive-minded head coach, is the ability to look at what a defense is doing and take advantage of it. Clint Kubiak, I wouldn't say he's pioneering this, but he is taking this to a new level of extreme, is using what defenses are doing to his advantage. We're going to go 12 personnel. We're going to put a tight end on the field. It's like what the Chargers did to the Titans yesterday. We're going to put Scott Matlock, a defensive tackle who plays fullback sometimes, on the field, and you're going to cover him with a defensive end because he's a defensive tackle. on defense and a fullback right now, you're not going to bring a linebacker. You're not going to put Cody Barton or Cedric Gray in man coverage on this guy because he's a big dude. You're going to match our personnel with your personnel. And then we're going to run that guy on a route into the flat against a defensive end who does no business being in coverage, and it's going to be an easy touchdown for Scott Matlock. That's pretty much what the Seahawks are doing. They're like, we're going to put all this heavy personnel on the field. We're going to show you run. You're going to bring your run-stopping defense on the field, and we're going to air it out over your head and make you look stupid. That's what Clint Kubiak has done all season, and it's working incredibly well. The Seahawks can't even run the ball. Like, they're a terrible running team.
Oh, they're not good running the ball. Not at all.
But all these defenses are saying, oh, you're going to try to run on us. Okay, we're going to line up in our run-stopping personnel packages and just get thrown the ball thrown over our heads.
Jackson Smith and Jigba is the best receiver in the NFL this year.
Well, he's a top five. I don't know if he's better than Jamar Chase, but he's a top five receiver for sure.
More receiving yards in the NFL. He's got.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there you go. But my point is that Clint Kubiak has like recognized something that he can exploit with defenses, with the way defenses are playing them. And that is a trait that you want in your head coach, because it doesn't mean that it's always going to work. But if he can always be looking at ways to exploit a defense versus just like whatever the hell Brian Callahan's offense was, which never looked to exploit any defense. And I think we were vastly oversold on what his like innovative offensive mind capabilities were, because he didn't run anything innovative. Did he? I mean, did he run one thing that felt innovative? I mean, he was like, it wasn't like he was not modern, but he's not at the forefront of innovating anything. Now, I think there is also a catch 22, there's a pitfall that can be had there. Whereas like if defenses start catching up to Clint Kubiak and they're like, oh, you are in a heavy formation personnel, we dare you to run the ball. We're going to keep our nickel defense on the field because we think you're actually throwing it, even though it looks like you're in a run formation, a run package. Is it still going to work if teams start catching onto it? And what's his next maneuver to counter whatever gets countered against him? Those are the things that I'm going to be sort of tracking with the Seahawks rest of the season, because I think at some point a defensive coordinator is going to be smart enough to realize that just because it looks like a run personnel package, the Seahawks are going to air it out and throw it over your head and beat you and make you look stupid anyway.
No, great points, and we are going to monitor Clint Kubiak, because remember, he started hot last year in New Orleans and then tailed off, but that, I mean, that personnel there was pathetic.
Not that the personnel in Tennessee is going to be much better.
Well, I mean, that's going to be an issue for every single coach that they hire, in all
agreed,
honesty.
Agreed, right? No, but it is miracles. It's just a little red flaggy to say, well, he's good with good personnel. He was bad with bad personnel. We needed someone who's going to elevate the personnel. I'm not saying Clint Kubiak can't or won't, but
I'm going to run through some rapid fire as we bring this stream to a close. We've been on here for 55 minutes.
We got some more questions.
Hanging out with you guys, ladies and gentlemen. You don't even got to bring up all the, I mean, you could bring up some, but I saw someone, Ben, you've mentioned Adam Graves a couple times. Yeah, good interior D lineman at Iowa. He's got 4 sacks this year. He had 6 last year. He's a senior, so he'll be in the draft. If they were to trade someone like Devondre Sweat, certainly I'd have Aaron Graves out of Iowa on my big board. Someone asked, if they hire Mike McCarthy, do you think he'd bring someone like Mike McDaniel in to call plays? No, I don't.
No way.
Certainly Mike McCarthy will call his own plays, Jay, if he's hired here. Guys are not in the business of trusting other guys, especially ones they don't work with before and don't know. So, no, there's no way Mike McCarthy pairs himself up with someone like Mike McDaniel. Would I trade Kevin Zeitler, and who are some potential Andrew, where do you have to be? Answer our questions. Kevin Zeitler, potential landing spots. Yeah, I think there are a couple. I think Tampa Bay Buccaneers have obviously been dealing with a ton of injuries on the interior of that O-line. You know, Cody Mock's out for the year. Detroit Lions have had injuries, and they just lost Christian Mahogany, I believe, to another long-term injury. And then you look at a team like the Los Angeles Chargers, who are not very good across the interior and are dealing with injuries on the tackles. Those were the ones that I had in mind. Even if Kubiak
I want to respond to this one. So Yangsty King, even if Kubiak sucks, I would still much rather try a young OC as a first-time head coach than a retread like Saleh, who already failed miserably. Well, this is a backwards way to think. So firstly, just looking at Pythagorean win totals, first-time head coaches average like 47% winning percentage. Retread head coaches average about 52% win percentage. So you're just like, if you're just blind picking retread or first-time head coach, retreads have more success. Secondly, coaches in their second stint have seen an uptick in win percentage by about 8 percentage points, I think was the number. I'm not sure if that's exactly the right number, but something in that range. Coaches in their second stint almost always show improvement from their first stint. Look at Mike Vrabel in New England, for example, right now. Not that that's a great example, but look at Andy Reid in Philadelphia. Made it to some Super Bowls in Philadelphia, gets to Kansas City, wins multiple Super Bowls. You know, like, guys learn from their past mistakes. That's like human nature. So I think that on the flip side of this, you try a young OC, you could get the next Brian Callahan, the next Adam Gase, the next Matt Eberflus. Like, I mean, that's a DC versus OC, but the point stands. It's a total unknown crapshoot shot in the dark when you're going with a first-time head coach with a retread. Now, I personally, Mike McCarthy's still top of my list. Like, he's the guy that I want the Titans to hire, bar none. Robert Saleh, very strong candidate, and I'm with you, Mello, on all the good things you've said about him. Saleh failed miserably in an organization where the owner's son was using Madden ratings to scout players. True story, using Madden ratings to scout players, where they sign Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers effectively took over GM duties and said, go get me this guy, go get me this guy, go get me this guy. We're building the offense my way, we're building the roster my way. And then he tore his Achilles in his first game. And Robert Saleh had to coach the rest of the season with Aaron Rodgers' team without Aaron Rodgers. Like, Robert Saleh was set up to fail so miserably in New York. The only concerns, like, the biggest concern I have with Robert Saleh is, would he want to come take his potential last chance as a head coach in an organization that might be just as dysfunctional, maybe slightly less dysfunctional than the New York Jets organization? Like, other than that, I think if Saleh wants to coach your team, you should hire him.
I also think the word retread sometimes gets a bad rap because it really sounds like it's, you know, a retread is really old and really antiquated. Like, Robert Saleh's what, like 40 years old, 42 years old, and was a head coach for 3.5 seasons old. Like, we're not talking about when they hired Mike Mularkey and he was on his third opportunity, right? And at least, I mean, you might feel that way about Mike McCarthy, but I think Mike McCarthy has had a lot of success throughout his career, right? He's won a Super Bowl. He's got one hell of an all-time winning percentage in the 60%, which is really, really high. Where do you stand on Arthur? I think we covered him a couple episodes ago, so I'll answer that one quickly. Look, I can't quit Arthur Smith. I kind of like Arthur Smith. I mean, I loved him as a Titans OC. I think he did a better job than advertised in Atlanta. They had a lot of issues there with quarterbacks. I don't think he was fully responsible for. He kept that team mediocre, and they were overachieving, and in turn, it hurt him because I think it prevented them, or it helps prevent them from really solving the quarterback problem once and for all. So in short, Arthur Smith would not be at the top of my list, but I wouldn't exactly throw up crying and screaming if they hired him.
To be fair, he did scout and draft Desmond Ridder and try to make him work as a quarterback, but
it took him in the third round, right?
Yeah, like, it's right. I have a question here, Justin. I'm curious what you think about the answer to this one. Say we are picking at 3 in the draft. Do you go with Reuben Bain or Jordan Tyson?
I go with Reuben Bain, Lee. I think as of now, I've just actually completed my scouting report.
Still the season.
Yeah, my mid-season scouting report on Reuben Bain and Jordan Tyson. I've watched a bunch of games on both of them the other day via All 22, and I wrote up scouting reports for both. I really like Reuben Bain. I mean, there's going to be some stuff out there about him potentially that's going to knock him down some people's boards. There's going to be some arm length stuff too, like he's going to have shortish arms. There's questions about production. Doesn't have a whole lot of sacks this year. There's some scouts I think it was A to Z Sports said there's scouts who have questions about his range. I'll start getting into those conversations with scouts myself in the next couple of months. But I love what I see on tape. I mean, he's just incredibly disruptive and productive. And I think edge is a bit more of a valuable position than wide receiver in terms of where they go in the draft, right? Like, edges tend to go earlier than wide receivers do. You're also likelier to get a good receiver at the top of the second round. You're more likely to get a good receiver than you are a good edge at the top of the second round. On top of it, all this might be a moot point because I think Reuben Bain is a better prospect than Jordan Tyson, regardless of what positions they play. And I like Jordan Tyson. He's probably going to be my wide receiver one. I'm fairly confident he's going to be my wide receiver one, though I do have a couple of questions about his game. Like, I don't think he's like a Ja'Marr Chase level wide receiver prospect. Like, I think he's probably the best receiver in this draft, but he's not elite. When it comes to prospects. And I really, really like Reuben Bain. So for me, I would take Reuben Bain there at number 3 to answer your question.
I've got two things I want to hit and then we can say goodbye. It has been over an hour, but the reason I haven't cut it off is because the people joining the stream, the number is still growing. It's not going down. So that means We're doing something right here. And, you know, I don't have to edit this long ass show because it's already out there on YouTube right now. Trade back from, I don't know, 10A. Trade back from the first pick.
One overall.
Thank you, Justin. A few spots and still get your pass rusher would be a dream scenario. See, this is why we're going to have this conversation later in the week, but this is why getting the number one pick would be so valuable to the Titans. If you get the number two pick, it's not a great pick because let's assume that it's Jets, Saints, Titans, right? If the Saints get the number one pick, they're taking the top QB on their board. The Jets know the Titans aren't taking a QB, so no one's going to trade up to the Titans. Now, if somebody wants to jump the Jets for a quarterback, it could still be a slightly valuable spot. But if you're if you're sitting number one overall, that team that's picking number three, just like you talked about the other day with the Giants, this past season, we're picking at three with the Titans at one. Knowing that the number two pick team also wants a quarterback, that they would have to jump that team to get their quarterback. And the cherry on top is that they pick three. So you're only going down to three, and you still have your pick of the non-quarterbacks. It is absolutely the ideal dream scenario, SBT highlights. You have nailed it. And that is why, if you're a Titans fan, we're going to have this conversation. I want to see Cam Ward get wins because it's important to his development to go win games. But at the same time, that number one pick would be so valuable to accelerate the rebuild.
We'll have the conversation, like you said, later in the week. But I think there's a pretty good chance that the Titans could get the fourth pick. The Titans are probably not going to get the fourth pick, but I think they could get the fourth pick in this draft and still come away with Reuben Bain or Arvell Reese out of Ohio State. I think quarterbacks are going to go fast and furious in 2026. I really do. If Ty Simpson declares he's going to go early, I think Mendoza's definitely going to go early. I think Dante Moore has a chance to go early. Titans could come away with fourth overall pick and probably take the guy you think they got to take at number one or number two. That's going to happen in this draft class. I would put money right now that the Titans are going to draft Jordan Tyson, Reuben Bain, or Arvell Reese. One of those three guys is going to be the Titans' first-round picks. I feel so good about that, just based on where they're going to end up drafting and the positional needs that they're going to have going into the draft, wherever they're picking. I think
last
that's going to do it.
Last one.
Got one more.
Well, just because I wanted to say how stupid this is. So Joey Turner, I'm so not looking forward to the impending stupid Cam versus drafted QB debate coming. It's already started in some fantasy football podcasts. Lots of local beat people are already talking about it. Ugh. I agree.
Our YouTube comments are we're probably losing viewers because I'm going in the YouTube comments. I can't believe how many people are jumping in our comments every week talking about Will Levis is going to be the starter next year or they're going to trade Cam Ward this offseason. I should have leave them alone, but I've been talking to all of them because I'm like, are you actually think this way?
Yeah, the fact that people think Cam Ward is a bust because of nine games of a rookie season where his head coach got fired in a horribly horrible environment is just idiotic. And that, my friends, is tomorrow's podcast as we look back and grade Cam Ward's Week 9 performance.
It might be a trade deadline one again. We'll see what the Titans
do. That's true. It might be a Wednesday pod. Coming up this week at some point. I have already thought this through. I've compiled some numbers and some data points and some talking points about why it is absolutely idiotic to think that Cam Ward, as a rookie, should be in his ninth game, should be elevating the offense around him. Cam Ward needs to be supported before he reaches the point where he is elevating the offense, okay? The guys that elevate an offense as a rookie, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Of course it happens. They're your guys like Jaden Daniels, like Robert Griffin, like Marcus Mariota as a rookie, although he didn't do a ton to, he had a better coach, debatably. It's not like the team won a lot of games his rookie season either. They ended up with the first overall pick again the next year, or I guess it wasn't again. But you know what I mean? My point is, when a guy comes in and can immediately elevate an offense as a rookie, most of the time it's because they can run the ball well. And that doesn't last very long. A season and a half to two seasons. And then look what happened to RG3. Look what happened even to Marcus Mariota. I don't want to mention Jaden Daniels' name right now because I feel really scared for his future and the injury proneness that he has shown. And last night's injury was horrific. And I feel really bad for Jaden Daniels and Washington Commanders fans because he's a really fun player to watch. But my point is, a rookie quarterback doesn't just come in and elevate your offense. So lower your expectations for what Cam Ward should be doing because he's a rookie who doesn't run the ball. Sustained success comes from winning within the pocket. All right, that'll do it. That'll do it for this episode. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. Make sure if you sat here with us for this whole 67 minutes, holy shit, Justin, is this our longest episode ever? That you hit subscribe. Subscribe to the channel. Like this video. Drop your thoughts in a comment below. Not in the chat. Not right now. Wait a second. You can keep chatting if you want, but we're done responding to them. We appreciate all you guys for tuning in, for sitting here. Hang out until the stream ends in just a few seconds and drop a comment below. Even if your comment is a further question that we didn't get to answer today, one of us will hop in the comments and respond to you. Or if it's just to say, we support this channel, everyone should support this channel, everyone hit that subscribe button. If you just type algo, send your comment, leave those comments below. It really helps us continue to grow. Thanks again. Shout out to Sinker's Beverages. I hope everybody's stocked up at Sinker's Beverages. We warned you, you would need some sort of consolation after yesterday's game, and we were right yet again about that. So make sure you head over to Sinker's Beverages. Justin, you want to take the final word?
We'll be back tomorrow as per usual. Now, it could be a live reaction to a trade, or it could be a 4 p.m. Maybe we go live right at the deadline and recap what the Titans did or didn't do. TBD, because if they do something, we're probably going to want to hop on right away the second they do it. So we'll see.
I can't do that. But
okay. Maybe good to know. Well, we're discussing things live on the pod. But either way, we'll have something call. For you tomorrow. Probably
heed
a Titans call, are going to do something, you would think.
Heed
so.
The Call will be live at 4 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. That's a spoiler because Heed the Call listeners don't know that yet. And I'm sure there's at least one Heed the Call listener who watches
maybe
this.
Maybe we go live at 3:15 or something. We'll figure it out. But
it'll be announced on tonight, Monday night's Heed the Call, that we are doing that tomorrow. We're also taping something at 3 Eastern tomorrow, taping something 3 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, and then we're taping a live show at 4 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. So you and I are going to have to work around.
Never mind. Graver's totally unavailable schedule. Tomorrow.
just we, that 3 to 4:30, 4, 5 o'clock look, Eastern
we'll figure
window.
It out. We'll be back tomorrow regardless of what the schedule is, but we'll be back tomorrow at some point, whether the Titans do something or not. Until you see us tomorrow, whenever Graver's presidential schedule permits, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.